The Military Exchange Talk Show is a faith-based organization that attends to veteran spiritual needs in areas of veteran health and wellness. We will talk candidly about veteran issues and how they relate to God's Word. This is your show to speak what's on your hearts and minds. I'm only here to facilitate truth and logic to my brothers and sisters who are on active duty, reserves, and veterans that have served this great country by putting themselves at risk on the front lines of freedom. So join me in a new way of thinking and healing and advocating for our men and women who need you, the veteran, even more today to be leaders in your own communities, to be godly parents, skillful workers, to be an example of citizenry with morals and ethos, and a true and loyal friend to the military veteran. Hey, welcome to the Military Exchange Talk Show, and I am your host, Corporal Tim Thornton. Sorry for the which only made it even harder to talk after that. I have with me today combat comedian, can't say former, because General Mathis said that's not the way it is anymore. You're once a Marine, you're always a Marine. And we have Mike Idolet, and he is a combat comedian and a Marine. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing very well, so how are you doing?
Very good. Now, it's great. I met the founder of your organization, Combat Comedians, and Dave DeFranco. We had him on our show last week, and you were kind enough to take my beg for some help tonight. I threw it out on Facebook, on Combat Comedians, and on my other Facebook page, the Military Exchange Dash Iron Mikes, and you said you'd be on the show with us. So if you want, Mike, tell us a little bit about yourself, like your experience, not your whole experience in Marine Corps, but, you know, your stats, and then we'll just start talking. We got lots to talk about.
All right. Well, I joined in 2002, September 11th, the tragedy of the World Trade Center happened my senior year. So I was a part of that giant push of high school kids that said, not in my house, send me. So I shipped out to Parris Island in July of 2002 and was made a 2847, which is a telecommunications repairman. So I didn't see any combat. I do know how to kill someone about 3,000 ways with a multimeter lead, though. And just kind of pounded around.
You kill somebody with a radio? You mean like call for fire?
Yeah, it's like a no. It's a tester. That's a joke we used to use all the time whenever we had O3s telling us that we were pogues. And the multimeter leads are kind of knife shaped. They're kind of pointy at the end. Like, I could take you down 3,000 ways with this multimeter lead. But but yeah, I was appalled. I'm not ashamed of my service at all. I had a great time. I got put under some really great leaders, some really great mentors. Had the opportunity to really venture out and do a lot of different things in terms of, like, I did everything from load pallets on a the C-130s out on the flight deck, to creating technical libraries, to being an instructor. And then I was medically discharged in 2011 because my knees just stopped working on me. I let them operate on me a couple of times, and finally I just said, that's it, no more.
So where did you wind up going? Lejeune or California?
I did my first year in Okinawa, Japan.
Awesome.
And I don't remember a lot of that first year. So a lot of people don't realize that, at least when I was there, like, the drinking age out there is money. So, I mean, yeah, we're not really supposed to consume alcohol under the age of 21, but not really supposed to. And what goes on can kind of sometimes be two different events. So
what base were you at?
I was in Camp Courtney. It was a very small base.
Oh, I don't even remember Camp Courtney.
That's funny. I was there for a year, and I don't even remember Camp Courtney.
I was at Schwab, and it was the most unfriendliest place, not Schwab, but off base, I've ever been to in my life. And as my listeners know, I was in for 11 years. I was Army, Army Reserve, Air National Guard, and then I went Marine Corps, active infantry, went to the Gulf War. And honestly, I would take Arabs over the Okinawans outside of Schwab. The Arabs were nicer to me. And, you know, and we were trying to kill them. So I don't know what it was with Okinawa, unless you went to Naha, which was 3 long hours on a bus, and then they treated you like humans. So
we kind of stayed on gate 2 of the Kadena Air Force Base.
Yep,
and that was very Americanized, very money driven. So we kind of got, and then I've always been a goofy guy. You know, I don't really cause trouble with anybody. And not saying that you did. But the experience that I actually work now with my best friend that I met in Okinawa, Japan, here in Rochester. So,
but he's American. And
he's a Rochester boy. I'm a Buffalo boy. Don't hold it against me.
Oh, another Rochester guy that you met over in Okinawa. That's cool.
My soon-to-be ex-wife is from Rochester as well. We used to make the joke that I've traveled all the way around the world to find a wife and a best friend from 90 minutes up to 90. So
nice. I used to wear a House of Guitars jacket when I was overseas. And, you know, you wear a jacket like that, and Rochester, Buffalo people are going to find you. They would just come right up and say something.
Yeah. I met another kid from Niagara Falls. We used to joke with him all the time about how because he was actually from Love Canal. So we would shut the lights off on him all the time to see if he would glow.
Yeah, right. I'm sure he did. You know, it's funny. We were talking prior to this. I was a grunt in the infantry, and my job almost always was to hump the prick 7, and not for the E7, but for the captain or the lieutenant, and you get that under one. And then I find out I'm schlepping this radio for almost 4 years, and there was a commo guy that could have came over and carried the radio instead of me. I didn't know that.
Well, yeah, we were talking about that, and I'm almost thinking of looking that up to find out when that MOS actually was put into active duty, because when I was an instructor in 29 Palms, they had a radio MOS, and that was it. They were radio operators. That's all they did. So
that's amazing.
Well.
You know, we all humped them. I know there was a guy in every platoon that wound up carrying a radio. And I always think it's crazy because with the radio and then a base plate and an M203 plus your combat load, I mean, you're carrying a ton of weight. I like being a radio man, though, because I knew what was going on. And I also had this Lieutenant Marciano. And the guys at home, they know about this guy. He was a Marine officer, but he was a bad guy, like a good guy, but a bad, terrible lieutenant when it came to following orders. He brawled with other lieutenants. He slept on duty. He had a stash of gold that he was always trying to sell in the parking lots. So when I was his radio man and he was sleeping in like Korea in the jungle, I was him on the radio. I would just pretend to be Lieutenant Marciano. It was crazy. Finally, a colonel figured it out, and he came over and he snuck up on us, and he caught my 6'5" lieutenant sleeping next to a tree, just barely, and I had to dig a foxhole. So I dug a foxhole. I'm 5'7", so my half is 5'7". He didn't help dig. His half is 6'5". And the colonel says, "Is that your foxhole?" And Marciano goes, "Yes, sir." And he goes, "I dug it myself." And he jumped in and he hit my side, which was only 5'7", which made him fall all the way over into his side, head first, all the way to the bottom. And he poked his head up with dirt all over his face. And the colonel goes, "Come here." And he walked him down into the jungle and he tried to straighten out Marciano. But you couldn't straighten the guy out. He was so funny when we were in 29 Palms, California. He saw how we were all bummed out because they weren't giving liberty to anybody enlisted. And I'm sitting on a cot in a tent in the middle of the desert, 29 Palms. We're all bummed. And he says, he goes, "Thornton." And I go, "Yes, sir." He goes, and he turned around and he's messing up his hair and he's doing something with his cami jacket. And like I said, 6'5", black hair, Italian guy, big, tall guy, big shape, or, you know, in shape. And he turns around and he does his Herman Munster imitation. He starts jumping up and down, going, it cracked us all up. And he just looked at me, he goes, "That was for you, just for you." And then he walked away. So how do you get a lieutenant like that?
I would have to say I always got along better with the warrant officers. I had a couple of really comical experiences. I don't know, maybe it was just, you know, my experience with itself, but the warrant officers always seem to be a little bit more grounded into the more enlisted kind of sense of humor and with the stories that they would be willing to tell us. They always just seemed a little bit more open and more willing to say, "Hey, I know this sucks, but, you know, I they literally did it too." So I don't know, maybe that's what it was.
Yeah, I don't know. I always had a good time. Now, tell us about why you want to be a combat comedian.
It's actually so I've always enjoyed the mentoring and the troop handling aspect of things when I was in. I was a very good sergeant psychologist, for lack of a better way to put it. I could always get through to the guys that were maybe, you know, how every platoon has that guy that just does not want to be whatever it is he's supposed to be.
Right.
I was always good at getting those guys to fall in and come under my wing. And it was just because I was honest. I don't know if it's just from, you know, being from Buffalo, being from this area, something about, knowing what it feels like to have a negative 17 wind chill keeps you honest, or I don't know what it was. But so I started doing the comedy thing because my wife left, and I said, you know what, I'm going to go do this because I've always kind of wanted to. And I liked being an instructor. I liked being up in front of people. I can make switchboards sound entertaining for hours on end because I had to do that every day, talk about switchboards. And that's pretty much how it started. I tried taking, you know, possibly the, you know, one of the more bad things. I got two kids. So one of the more undesirable circumstances to happen. And I tried to flip it into a positive. And that's how I started doing the comedy. And then as far as the combat comedians thing goes, I started reading all these statistics and these guys struggling. And like I said, I'm very lucky. I'm blessed. I got out with a skill that, granted, it took some work and my buddy making a phone call for me, but I got out with a skill that I could directly translate into the civilian world. And through going through the transition program and going through all these different things, I kind of feel obligated to turn around and come back and maybe help some of the guys that were, you know, maybe not as set up to make the easy transition that I made. And that turned into me going to see a PTSD therapist, because that's one thing that I love about talking with, speaking with veterans, is that as soon as you can throw out there that you did something, you're in with them. They'll listen to you. They'll hear you out. Whereas civilians are more, tend to be more like, show me on your resume.
Yeah.
And then I found out that I myself had, had PTSD and things that maybe I thought I dealt with growing up that I didn't. And that kind of over the last, since August of 2015 has been just trying to weed all this stuff out and reprogram myself into actually seeing things for what they are instead of what they were.
That's good. So yeah. you do this, you get up on stage and you, through the guidance of Dave DeFranco, or are you kind of like, how much stage time have you done so far?
I do a lot of the open mics. I actually kind of took a little bit of time off. I'm getting ready to go back into it now because we got a show coming up on the 19th. So with the help of Ralph Tetta, who's been in the industry a long, long time, along with Dave, and they just were positive. And one of the things that has actually helped me with the PTSD therapy is that you have to find your comedic voice. And in order to do that, you have to do a lot of soul searching. It's not just jump up on stage and kind of, it's not like, I mean, I could say ridiculous things that are funny. I hung out with Marines for 8.5 years.
Right. Well, you could fart more, and Marines are going to laugh.
Right. It's more of being able to look at a topic and then attack it from different directions and try to find the funny. And in the process of doing that and finding my comedic voice, it actually helped me kind of separate some of the who I really am from who I became as a result of what I've been through. And that is the hardest part of dealing with the PTSD, because it messes with, a lot of people don't realize, but it messes with your perception. So how do you identify something that messes with how you see things to begin with? You know, and that's pretty much how the combat comedian thing has come about. And I'm hoping to be able to share my experience and maybe speed up that initial process of identifying through what I've been learning about how this process works and how it's a disorder. So how the disorder actually works and how it manifests within different people and just help them out, get them. Smiles on faces. Let's get you right. Let's get you having fun again. Because that's one of the things that definitely takes away is the ability to enjoy the ride, to enjoy the journey. And that is debilitating, especially for
us,
for jarheads, right? We're so good at making what
sucks be fun. That's what we do. That's our niche. That's why we're better than everybody. Because you can put your
this is going to suck with a smile on our face and we go charging ahead.
Well, you know, I just watched this video. I watched this video of a bunch of grunts in some woods, and it's just downpouring and downpouring, and you can see the mud, you can see the water building up under their makeshift hooch, and they're sitting there cooking just a little bit of an MRE, and the misery of obviously hours of being in those like freezing cold rain temperatures. And I'm going, yeah, that's what we did. If you weren't in the crap and you weren't giving crap, then you were just spending hours and days of your life just in the most miserable conditions. One of my favorite stories is I woke up in the desert overseas in Iraq with a rat under my neck that I was using for a pillow and another rat under my arm that was staying warm on me. And as the gunny came by and told everybody to get up, I sat up and the rats ran away. And the hardest man I ever met in my life, Gunny Fenstermaker, Vietnam veteran, would slap the crap out of you if you even looked at him wrong. And he winced and pulled his head back, and I go, Gunny, I go, I want to go home. And he goes, oh, I don't blame you. That was, and he just laughed at me and stepped over my fighting position and kept going.
That is insane. Sleeping on rats.
Rats. I was using a rat. Well, here's the funny thing. My brain talks to me, right? So the rat is under my neck, between my shoulder and my right side of my head. And as the gunnies walk in line saying, telling people to get up, my brain says, there's nothing soft in the desert. And I went, and I sat up, and that, and I looked, and that's when the one rat ran away and the other rat ran away. And, you know, and as a Marine, my wife and everybody I know, whenever I don't want to do something, like I don't want to stand in the rain without an umbrella or without a hat on, I don't want to stand in the cold with, you know, for no reason at all, they always go, well, you were a Marine. So, like, you should be immune to all the lousy parts of life and nature. You know, a bug crawls on you. You were a Marine. Why would that bother you now? I'm more of a sensitive guy now than I was when I was in. Now I don't want anything touching me.
Yeah, my buddy and I were standing outside smoking at work, and he tells me, I got to get new boots. I got a hole in my boot. And I was walking in this morning. I stepped in a puddle and actually felt the water soak into my sock. Now my foot's wet, and I don't want to do anything. I just want to go home. I follow this statement up with, you know what I hate, man? Sometimes I forget to take my keys out of my pocket, and I got to, like, squat down in front of the server racks and everything. And I rub like a little raw spot in my leg my keys chafe my leg. And then I pause, and it's like the Marine in me just heard the complete just BS I just uttered. And I look to my friend and go, dude, we used to be warriors. Like, what? did you just hear what we just said? Oh, my foot's wet and my keys hurt my crotch. Like, what? What happened to us, man?
Well, especially like your crotch area, you know, I know as a Marine, you humped 5 miles, 10, 15, 20, 25, and you were raw. You had blisters on your feet. You're carrying a combat load just to do that. What did we call that? The 25 miler. This is one of the worst things they do to Marines. You hump 25 miles with a full pack. You got blisters, you're raw, you're exhausted, and you get to some park area, and they'll have a general or a colonel talk for the next 2 hours while you stand at attention with the pack on. Maybe they go parade rest, and you're just a raw, sweaty piece of angry meat. And then this guy gives a 2-hour speech. The band clicks on, and guys who lock their knees are passing out, hitting the ground. And you're going, "Where am I? Why am I doing this?"
Yeah.
But then you feel you're so damn proud that you did it. You almost don't care.
Yeah, yeah. We had they like to do like retirement ceremonies and stuff with us in 29 Palms in the middle of August. At noon. That was always fun. Cause like, for me, because I screwed my knees up, it's 120 degrees outside, but I never had to worry about locking my knees up because I screwed them up. So I would never do that under any circumstance whatsoever to extend my leg, straight fully. That, and I would always buy my pants, at least a size too big. So that I could do that, and there was enough fluff where that you couldn't tell. So we're all standing out there, and me and all the instructors are standing behind everybody, and we would nudge the guy next to us and say, like, four up, three over, and we'd be able to forecast within 5 minutes of somebody passing out. We couldn't do anything. I mean, you're standing there, you just wait for him to drop. And then you go get them.
My secret, and then we got to go to break. I wore biker Speedos under my camis all the time, so it kept everything so tight. Basically, I was wearing nylon stockings like Joe Namath, but it was biker shorts, nylon. So everything stayed still. Nothing swang, nothing moved. It just stayed still for the whole the whole hump. Hey, Mike, stay with us. Don't go anywhere. We're going to bring Hector in. I'm going to introduce you to Hector. And folks at home that's listening, we're going to go to break, and we'll be right back after these messages.
When you hear the phrase, boots on the ground, that phrase means our men and women that are in the American Armed Forces, and that means they're ready to fight. They wear the very best gear America has to offer. I'm talking the very best in leather, Gore-Tex, Finsulate, three-layer Vibram soles, Nomex, side zippers, and stitching. Quality that the civilian market can't even come close to offering. When you say quality, you want U.S. government issue. Iron Mike's is the leading distributor for military government contractors. They offer jump boots, Mickey boots, jungle boots, SWAT boots, sniper boots, steel toe, Navy deck boots, and Marine Corps and Army desert boots. Corafram low quarter shoes, mucklucks, extreme cold weather, and lightweight tactical boots in 6, 8, and 10 inches. Iron Mike's takes trade-ins of all your old military boots. Iron Mike's is located at 2485 State Route 332 in Canandaigua. Check us out online at ironmikes.co.
Another tactical to practical moment has been brought to you by Iron Mike's Military Exchange Ammo Cans. What an awesome box. It's all metal, seals watertight, and is nearly indestructible. It's so watertight, people bury them in the desert with water, so they will have water later. The USGI Ammo Can, that's the United States government issue ammo can. It's made in the United States to carry ammo, but it does so much more. It's a bear box used by the Boy Scouts of America. Geocaching, coins, cigars, toolbox, hazardous materials, CDs, and anything precious you want to keep safe. They even come in your choice of color, olive drab. This tactical to practical moment was brought to you by Iron Mike's Military Exchange, located in Canandaigua, New York.
Check them out online at ironmikes.co.
Hey, welcome back to the Military Exchange Talk Show, and I'm Corporal Tim Thornton, and I'm here with Mike Adelette, a Commo Marine. We won't call him a Pogue, will we, Hector? Because I also have Hector Cruz, the former Marine Corps boxing middleweight Hall of Fame guy. And Hector, say hi. I'm always so glad to hear you.
Oh, brother, I'm blessed to be among you. I'm blessed. Good evening, America. And brother, it is great talking to you, Tim. I can't wait to see you in person over the summer.
Oh, I can't wait to see you. You know, now, Hector, Mike said off the air, he said he always wanted to learn how to box. And I said, well, yeah, me too. I learned it from Hector because he was always running around trying to beat me up every day.
We got into, I was actually sharing that with my son, the scuffles that we got into, and I was like, you know, Tim was a strong guy, so I made sure that I was always on my toes with him. And I bounced around like a rabbit, but I threw punches as I was bouncing. It just you, I knew you were strong, so I was like, if he gets a hold of me, I only weighed 140 pounds at that time. I'm almost 200 now, but you know, that's another story.
Now you're all muscle. You were muscle before. You were muscle before. And now you're 200 pounds of muscle.
No, trust me. I'm a little flabby, but I do hit the gym 3 or 4 times a week. And as we get older, we put on weight, you know. And I watch what I eat. I have to. I'm diabetic, so you know the health issues, you know, from serving and all that stuff, catches up to you when you're older, you know. So I just learned to appreciate life a lot more now. And when me and my brother's rendezvous, like when we did it November 10th at Cookies Tavern in Philadelphia, it is one of the most amazing times, and I hope you can come down this year, Tim. Hope you can come down to Cookies Tavern for the
Maybe Mike will come down with me.
Mike, come on
down.
Set up a boxing rep.
Well, I that would have to make you a best friend, because most of my best friends have punched me in the mouth at least once or twice in our history of friendship, so...
let me tell you something. And the one thing that I truly, truly treasure with the relationships, like we might have fought each other, but let somebody else come to fight one of us, we had each other's back. That's without a doubt. Everything that I learned in the Marine Corps, I carry to this day. That code, we don't leave anybody behind. We watch each other six. And when you hear about tragedies and like the terrorist killing in Tennessee, and my heart goes out because I was like, wow, I wish I was there, you know. And no matter where they're at, who they are, what color they are, we don't care about color. We all bleed one color, and that's red. And, you know, I live and die by that code. You know, I put God at the forefront, and that I'm truly, truly blessed to be here because Timothy has some stories that I'm sure that one day that I, when I write a book, I will have him write them and publish them as he writes them. I lived a reckless life in the Marine Corps, very reckless. It was all spree the poor, though. It was, I don't care if I get shot. I don't care how big they are. You know, that Marine Corps toughness just definitely kicks in, and the pride that comes with it. You bring everything with it, and you fight to your last breath. And I'm grateful that I still have breath to give.
You're always the man. I mean, Hector was such a – he was like a bigger than life when we were in, you know – I had a lot to say. Hector had a lot to say, but you know, it was. I always love my Hector Cruz stories. You know, and when Hector's talking about how Marines never let anybody else, you know, come between them and the guy they serve with, even if you're not getting along with that guy, Hector, the case in point, you, Sergeant Reeves, Lance Corporal Rob Williamson, Big Will, and Hector Cruz. Get into a fight with recon, and they win.
That was during the
and by the way, they won. So, all you recon guys, you lost that fight with those three bruisers, and that's three guys you don't want to fight.
That we were actually the super squad team. We were actually the whole squad was part of the super squad competition. We took, I think it was second or third that year at second div. And
that's right. You and I and Williamson and Reeves and all these other guys, we were super squad. We won it 2 years in a row until you get to, like, the very high end. And then they would stack it full of, like, you know, hard asses, recon guys, stuff like that. And we were all natural. We were all natural. 2 years in a row, we won super squad.
If you remember the first competition the last event out of that three-day competition is a 10-mile force march, and that's you being in the field awake for 48 hours, 56 hours, and now all of a sudden, the last part of the competition, we went up against it was 2-2, and 3-2, and Sergeant Reeves at the time was like, we're gonna double time the first 5 miles, and I was like, oh my god, and you know what? We motivated each other that we did it. We put so much distance between us and the other two squads that we waited for them at the finish line, like I think it was like 40 minutes. That's how much distance we put between us. They thought we were going to burn out. But once we got to like the 4 or 5 mile mark, we just force marched it the last 5 miles. And I think we stopped one time. And that was, and you know, Camp Lejeune come around March, April, May, it gets hot. And, you know, but at the end of it, we were glad that it was over. And it was truly, truly an honor serving with you, Tim. I tell you, brother, I miss you, Williamson. I miss all the guys. I talked to Sergeant Major Reeves the other day.
Guess who is on the line and wants to come on and talk? Big Will.
Big Will, brother!
I feel like Art Linkletter. I'm going to tell you your story, your life, and in your past... And I bring you your high school teacher, but instead, I bring the third amigo.
Oh my God, Williamson, Big Rob.
Is he on yet? No, we got a dial tone. Maybe Rob will call back.
Yeah, I hope if you're listening, Rob, call back. I would love to, because like I said, I know I would, over the summer, I'm graduating college in May. I'm going to take a good month off, and I want to definitely come up to Rochester, swing by Ohio, and definitely hit Michigan to see Rob. But he's always camping, so I'll probably have to bring my my Alice pack and all that stuff with me, along with bug spray.
That's what Rob does. I don't even understand it.
Every time I turn around, he's on a cruise, he's on a vacation, he's camping. When does he work?
Hey, you know what? Hey.
You got Rob on the line?
I am on the line.
Big Rob. Will.
What's up, brother? What's up, brother?
Hey, man.
God bless you, man. How you doing?
I'm good, brother. How about yourself?
Oh, man, I'm good. Hanging in there, counting down the days to graduation. 72 in the wake up. That's what I'm
good for you, man. So
yeah, thank you, brother. How's everything going, Rob? How's the family?
Family's good. Family's good.
Yeah. Hey, Tim was talking about the time we fought Recon while we were doing that with Chris. Remember?
Yeah, I remember that. Austin Reed.
Oh, my. We went through that bivouac area, and we were, because it was a search and destroy mission. They told us to just destroy whatever we could find. And
found them.
They paid the price again. I know Williamson, I was the radio man at the time, and the radio man jumped on me. We started fighting. I lost my balance. Williamson grabbed him, threw him, jumped on another guy, and I hit the radio man with a right hand left hook. He fell down. And then we all just started jumping on everybody that had two bodies. And, thank God that it was dark and we had camera pen on, because I think they were looking for people the next day.
Wow. Hey, Rob.
You guys sound...
What are you doing these days? Now, Cruz is the first of us to graduate college. I know you've got a huge job or like trade experience.
I work in the plastic injection field. I build and repair plastic injection molds.
Okay, that's good money, brother. That's good money. They keep you busy.
Yeah, it's a decent living. It takes care of my family, and that's all that counts.
That's what I want, man.
I'm still selling shoes like Ed Bundy, or not Ed Bundy. Yeah, Ed, whatever his name,
Al Bundy.
I'm selling shoes. That's what I do. Boots, shoes, sleeping bags. Yeah.
Wow, you guys are truly, truly, I'm blessed to be talking to you guys.
Yeah, I feel the same way, Hector. I miss you guys, man. We got to try to get together.
Man, you know, definitely, man. I miss you guys like crazy, man. I can't wait to, hopefully, let's see if maybe November 10th we can set up a reunion. Where we can all get together down at Cookie's Tavern or set something up in the near future for 1-2. If you guys remember Burgos Lopez, you remember Burgos Lopez from 1st Platoon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he lives in Miami. Sergeant Small just retired from the Federal Department of Corrections, and they're going to try to coordinate a reunion.
Yeah,
I guess we can try to get together, man. I would love that.
Hey, Hector, tell us about how you got inducted into the Hall of Fame for are you considered a middleweight boxing champ?
No, I was the welterweight champion, 89 and 90.
Welterweight.
Yeah, 89 and 90. Remember when I got arrested in Okinawa for fighting at the E Club in Kadena? I remember that, oh my God, like it was yesterday. And I got arrested.
Did you get into a fight with the Camo guys?
I got into a fight with an army guy, and he was a big dude. He was a big dude, and when the duty ends, the officer of the day came to pick me up. It was a First Sergeant Griffin. Remember First Sergeant Griffin? And he looked at me and was like, "Damn it, Cruz, when are you gonna start staying out of trouble?" When he looked at the guy, he goes, "You telling me you beat that big dude up right there?" I said, "Yep, First Sergeant." He goes, "Get your ass in a Humvee." And I was in the back of the Humvee. Mind you, it had no cover and it was raining. So I paid the price. And when I got back, one of the stipulations was I couldn't leave the base for the remainder 3 weeks that we were there. And I had to go to the boxing team. Well, I thought that was like an option. And I told Captain Watts, I said, "Well, sir, I don't box anymore." "No, it's either that or you get a court martial. So when do you want me to start training?" That's exactly what I told him. And I had a month and a half to train, and let me tell you, it was not easy after being retired 3 years. And I was grateful that I fought some great guys. These guys had heart. Everything that the Marine Corps lives by. I had three tough guys, and two of them are going to be at the All-Marine Hall of Fame induction in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, April 14th through the 17th.
You fought our local hero.
Charles the Natural Murray.
Charles the Natural Murray. Yep.
Yeah, that was my last fight right before I went to Marine Corps boot camp. I tell you, I give my hats off to Charles. He hit me with everything he had, and he knocked me down four times, and I kept getting back up. I'm not going to say that I would beat him because he was at his prime right there. He was ranked number one in the United States. Yeah, he was number one in the United States in the amateurs at that time. And the referee stopped the fight in the third round, and he came up to me in the locker room after the fight. He goes, "Damn, I hit you with everything but the kitchen sink, and yet you kept getting back up like I hit you with nothing." I said, "I got no legs. I had to lose 4 pounds the day of the fight." And I kept in contact with him through another brother, a Marine Corps boxing champion, Steve Stokes, who reconnected us. And I would like to see Charles when I go out there to see you too, Tim. You know, because he's still out there in the Rochester area. And I'll get his information from my brother, Steve Stokes, who will be inducted into the Hall of Fame, too, on April 16th down in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. And, brother, I tell you, it was an honor serving with you guys. As I see it, you guys are my brothers for life.
He's great. What about you, Rob? You got anything more to say to Hector?
Nah, just take it easy, brother. It's great talking to you. I know we caught up together about 2 or 3 years ago, and
yeah,
you haven't changed, man. As soon as I talked to you, I knew it was you. I knew your voice.
Yeah, man.
People at home don't realize, but there is nothing more healing. You can talk to all the Marines you want and have a great conversation, like Mike Adelette and I were doing at the beginning of the show. But when you talk on the phone to somebody you served with, that's a whole different feeling. It's absolutely amazing.
It is amazing. It's amazing. Go ahead, Rob.
No, I'm just going to say, I agree with it. That's right. I know Tim and I caught up a few years back, and after some long searches, and we finally got together and got to spend a couple days together. And I mean, we picked up like we hadn't been apart for 25 years. So that was cool. That's one of my most favorite experiences here in the last couple of years.
Hey, Rob, while I got you on the air, can I tell my favorite Hector, me, and you story?
Sure. God, which one?
I know you know what this is. So we're in, I think it was Fort Stewart or Camp Pickett, cold weather training on the fly, because I guess they didn't want to spend any money. And it is icy, snowy, ice and snow. And I told this lieutenant, I said, "Sir, you can't bivouac us at a bottom of a hill in freaking Virginia. We're going to be in a huge pond by morning." Didn't matter. If you remember, Rob, we woke up floating on those rubber bitches.
Yeah.
Literally.
And thinking we were going to be smart and run over to the laundry, and everybody else was already in there.
Yeah.
And then, so the next night, it's even, you know, so it's really cold. Now it's snowing. And Rob's what, 6 foot, 10 inches long? You know, he's the biggest friend I had in the Corps. There's me. I'm 5'7" and too wide to begin with. And we're in this little stupid green canvas pup tent. And I swear to God, all night long, I kept thinking, why is he all over me? God, he's leaning on me. I can't move. I had to sleep on one shoulder. We wake up, and there's a freaking Puerto Rican in the middle of us. In that pup tent made for two guys. And who was that guy? Hector Cruz.
I was cold.
And that's what you said. You said, I wasn't cold between you guys. And then Williamson chased you out of the tent. And it was game on again. Oh, you can't.
Oh,
you
my
can't
God. I'm like laughing. I'm literally like red right now. I'm just like, oh, he's I remember that very well, brother.
You snuck in the middle of the night and stole that space.
Brother, look.
Hey, death and overcome, right?
Hey, that's right. And you know what? I didn't even have my sleeping bag. I had you two guys.
I know. You said that to me. No, I wasn't cold, and I'm going, I'm half out of the tent over here.
Please, I didn't even have, the only thing I had on me was the poncho liner. That's all I needed.
Yes, because all of our right stuff was soaked like, wet the night before.
What's that?
Everything we had was wet from the night before.
Oh, God, I was so miserable. I mean, do you remember, Korea, when I fell into the rice paddy head first?
Yes.
No, that was after
yes.
I came home.
I feel so bad because you fell off the rice paddy. You were literally face down in the water.
I was drowning.
And you had that huge combat load on your back, and everybody kept walking by, and because you are bigger than life, and you're basically the combat comedian, everybody thought you were screwing around, myself included. I walked by you, as did like the other 10 guys, and I kicked your frame, your Alice frame, and I said, Cruz, get up. And I saw you push, and I couldn't understand what you were still doing. And then Sergeant, with an L, he reached
Larson.
Down. And
It was Larson.
He pulled you with one arm all the way up. I remember looking back, and you were freaking purple.
It was
you were
cold.
Half of that rice paddy.
It was nasty, let me tell you. But what was worse is because Lieutenant Williams took us on a patrol that night. Remember, got us lost in the mountains in Korea for freaking like 5 hours. And then he told us, okay, 50-50. We went, got in a, like one guy up, one guy down. I went to sleep. I fell asleep quick. 5 minutes later, everybody get up, pack up. I started cursing them out the whole way down the hill. And I guess because of my mouth, I yelling, I lost my footing and I fell into it. I guess that's what you call, you reap what you sow, you know? So I truly, I was freezing. They stripped me down, and Gunny Fensermaker came in the Humvee when he found out it was me. And they stripped me down, put me in an aluminum blanket or something like that, wrapped me up and threw me in the Humvee because they thought I was going to freaking go into hypothermia, you know? And I tell you, Halverson posted something like that on Cruz. I'll never forget the time we were in Korea and you were walking down the hill talking all that junk the whole way down, and then you almost drowned. And I said, yeah, you got to remember that, huh? And I tell you, that's one day that I'll never forget. I will never forget that day in all my life.
I think Larson saved your life.
Because
your hands,
right now,
you were buried right up to your forearms in that stupid muck.
Because my helmet got stuck in the mud at the bottom, and I had it strapped up. So I couldn't get up, and plus the pack, which was like, forget it, unbelievable. We had cold weather gear in it. So I could not get up, and I was swatting my arms and nobody. And then all of a sudden, I tell you, it's like I saw the light when Larson pulled me up. I saw the light, and I wasn't even angry. I was more like, God, I'm breathing, because I really, really swallowed a lot of water, and I could barely get up. I honestly thought I was going to die. That's what I thought.
You were purple. I saw you.
No, the fact that I didn't lose consciousness was a miracle. Well, to show you, you know, I don't know, but I know God has plans for me, and I'm grateful for them. I don't know what they are completely, but I truly am grace. I'm blessed with His grace, His love, and mercy, man. Brothers, I just love you guys so much, man. You know, whatever we went through it together. We argued with each other. We saw the frustration, the pain, the joy, the anger, everything in each other's eyes, in each other's hearts. And you know what? When you go through something, I understand what you're going through. You know, and for that, I'm forever grateful for you guys, brother. Because you guys really, like, especially when we were in tight quarters on that ship, you know, we got on each other's nerves. We got on each other's nerves very easily, and you know, I think we got into one skirmish, right, on the way over there, Thornton? Corporal Toons.
Oh, don't make me tell this. You ran up to this, we were in some tent in these army cots, and you ran up, and you were gonna like, hit me while I was in my sleeping bag, and then I found out that you had ran up on me, so when you got in your sleeping bag, I ran up on you. But I didn't want to hit you any more than you really wanted to hit me, at least not unfairly. And
yeah,
then
definitely.
Something happened between you and Williamson, and here's where Williamson has superpowers. He was all-city Detroit tackle. So I could never catch you. And all of a sudden, Williamson goes, I'm not screwing around like Thornton, which kind of hurt my feelings a little bit. But he took off, and he tackled you, which is what he does for a living. And he, I swear, picture like a shallow grave, and Hector all about 6 inches under the grass. And Williamson gets up and goes, there, not like Thornton. And he took off, and I'm like... Yeah, but I don't even know how to tackle like that. So
I remember he knocked the wind out of me a little bit that day. He knocked the wind out of me. I was like, damn it. I'm grateful he showed me mercy and didn't swing at me. You know? So I'm grateful.
I already told you if I got a hold of you.
Yeah, I know. I'd be, I felt like a pretzel. You know? So I'm grateful for that, brother. Oh, my God. The story. I tell you, when I write my book, brother, you guys are going to have to send me a lot of these stories, and I'm going to put them in and give you guys credit and stuff like that. You know, because what I want to do is actually the stories that y'all write to me, I'm going to put them in my book just as they're written by you. I'm not going to change or alter anything. And the chapters that are going to be on the Marine Corps is going to be all you guys. All you guys. Like I told you, Sergeant Major Elvington, who lives in Chesapeake, Virginia. I got his number and stuff like that. Well, I had it, but I got his address. I know I have it somewhere. And, you know, from him, remember that time we were doing PT and he threatened to smack the shit out of me? And I said, you ain't smacking Jack. And, you know, later on that morning, he goes, report to my office. And then, you know, we were in our BDUs, and he's coming out of his office. And I'm like, he goes, get your ass over here. And I said, first sergeant. He goes, what do you want me to do? Write you up or kick your ass? I said, well, I thought you could kick my ass. Until he started taking off his chevrons. I said, oh, my God, this old man is serious. You know, so I said, you know, in quick retreat mode, I backed up and got into a fighting stance. And he looked at me and goes, look at you, you little Puerto Rican. I'll kick your little city slicker ass. And I was like, oh, wow. I said, you crazy, first sergeant. You know, and I was like, he goes, yeah, a little bit. And I said, and he goes, I'm a little crazier than you. I said, yeah, I believe that. So he gave me an extra duty for like 2 days. And I did that, you know, but he was one tough cookie. He was one tough cookie. And I really, what was him and First Sergeant Griffin and Elvington, I really respected them very, very much as my first sergeants. They were the best. And Gunny Fishermaker, oh, God, do I remember him. Wow. That was one tough cookie.
He was incredible. But, yeah. You know, people don't realize that movie, Heartbreak Ridge, you know, I don't know about the combat, you know, part that they did there, but the rest of it, the barracks life, if that wasn't dead on to what the grunts in the Marine Corps is really like, and we just talked it, we just shared that. It was tree-lined justice, and it was always, even if you questioned authority, you basically had the right to physically question authority.
Yeah.
And the new Corps is probably not like that.
No. I know a few kids that went in, and trust me, I'm not saying that the values have changed, but I think the toughness has, you know, the Corps still has that toughness. You know, but like I said, I remember Sergeant Ote.
We gotta go. That's the end of the whole show. We just did an hour.
Okay.
Wow. Hey, love
man.
You guys. I'll catch up with both of you. And including Mike Adelette, combat comedian, Hector Cruz.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Ultimate boxing champ.
It was
and
an
Big
honor,
Will.
Man. God bless you.
All City Tackle Detroit.
God bless you, brother. Semper Fi, man.
Semper Fi, guys. Thank you.
Semper Fi, guys. God bless. Semper Fi.
All right. Hoorah. Bye.
You've been listening to the Military Exchange Talk Show, brought to you by the Marine Corps League Detachment 468, Iron Mike's Military Exchange on Route 332 in Canandaigua, New York, U.S. Army Recruiting, Geneseo Warplane Museum, and the cast and crew at the Military Exchange Talk Show. Listen to our podcast and watch our video show at the Military Exchange Talk Show on YouTube and themilitaryexchange.com, our personal website. To contact Corporal Tim Thornton, send an email to themilitaryexchange@gmail.com.